Accession number 11588, Reel 1.
Lu Xiang, Reel 1.
You really, could you tell me how it was you came to know the FAU in China and work with them? I think, first of all, if you tell me what you, where you lived in China and what you were doing at that time.
To start with, I went to China in 1938 after I finished high school from Singapore. And then I went to the university in China, in Kunming first, then down to Chongqing, and ended up in Chengdu. And immediately after that, Singapore, World War II started, Singapore fell. Then I have no resource of income to study. So there was an announcement or something on the campus saying the FAU people are coming to the university to recruit some Chinese members. So that time I was thinking, well, I came to China actually to serve in the war, and there's a good opportunity to join them. So when they turned up for this interview, I showed myself, and the man that actually talked to me is Theo Willis. And I explained to him that I'm educated in English. I'm not Chinese educated, and but I can speak the Chinese language because I've been in China by then about 2.5-3 years. And we seem to strike it right away because he understands me like I understand him, whereas the other Chinese student might have a little trouble with the English. So I ended up and I was accepted and went on to join them in Guiyang. In Guiyang, we had this automobile training, Red Cross training, but I don't know, maybe it's my bringing up attitude because I study English and I'm a bit aggressive. Being sometimes I don't agree with what they say. You see, maybe it's the complex that I grew up in Singapore. I met a lot of Britishers. And when they come to China, and then when the people from England goes to China, they don't get so used to the local customs. And I always feel that sometimes they say things that it's what they are telling people in Singapore telling me. So I just speak my mind. Being young, when I joined them, I'm only 18 years old. And then I was training along with them, working along with them. We seem to get along. But how they feel, I don't know. I feel that I get along with them.
Did you understand when they were pacifists? Could you appreciate that?
That is one of the things being young, I do not understand what they mean by pacifists. Because you see, out in Singapore, the Japanese war started long before World War II. And I was involved with the Japanese war, raising money for the cause in China and all. So when I graduate from high school, my intention is to go to the university, but my parents We are from a very poor family, and my parents said, I got 11 brothers and sisters. He don't think he can afford to send one to the university. So after I graduated, near 6 months, then we were talking about China, and all of a sudden somebody put ideas into my head, why not go to China and study in the U? And I said, okay. So I didn't even get permission from my parents. I just took up and took off. And when I went to China, I wrote them, and then he says, okay, since you're there, you will manage whatever finance we can for you to study on.
And who paid for that then in China? Would it have been the Chinese government for your education?
No. Well, the Chinese government do pay some of the tuition and all, but we have to pay our living expenses. And we in Singapore that went to China, we live, our standard of living is very, very much higher than the locals. That means we need our further assistance for finance to get along. And when Singapore fell, no money came. I could have got a scholarship, but then, as you say, if you live like the local Chinese, who a lot of them were since the war went into Chongqing and Chengdu, we call that outside the enemy lines, and living was not too bad, but it's for, I feel for my standard, is quite tough.
Did it improve when you went into the FAU? You know, was the living standard there?
Oh, the FAU is good. The standard is good. Everything is good. Except that later on when I was sent to Burma, and then the war got heated up there, then I was caught behind the lines, and I did certain ambulance work and all. And then that is the time I realized, being a pacifist, you cannot carry a gun.
Yes, what did you think of that?
So I always feel that I never thought I would be a pacifist, because I went to China actually to serve in the army to fight a war. Then anyway, I've signed up for them, and then the retreat came in Burma. So I walked out of Burma into India. There and then I got back into China, and I make up my mind to quit to join the army. And then that is where I left the FAU, and I was in Kunming for a few months. I met my wife, and she died in 1949. She was a nurse with another unit called the New Life Medical Unit. And I was in Piao Bui in Burma when they bombed a rail station. I got hurt and I went to the hospital. There I met her. And when I went to India, came back, Dr. Me of the New Life Movement said, well, since you quit FAU, why don't you come and join us to drive ambulance for us? And I thought, well, I've got nothing to do, because I set up for the exam to join the Air Force. I didn't get my notice yet. So I joined them for 6 months. Then I was called up to go into the Air Force.
What was the New Life Movement like compared with the FAU?
Compared to the FAU, they do the same thing, the same old thing. And they more or less look after the American Volunteer Group. In other words, the American before the Pacific War, before Pearl Harbor, they had this American Volunteers. They formed a group. General Synod recruited them and formed a group to the Soldier of Fortune, anyway, to go and fight the war in fly aircraft in China.
These would be the Flying Tigers.
Then later on, they become the Flying Tigers. When the Pacific War started, when Pearl Harbor was bombed, then the American government recruited, take all of these people into the Air Force, giving them a commission and all. Then the former AVGs are mostly just wild flyboys, you know, they fly circus, they do all kinds. And they are soldier of fortune. They are. But when they got into the army, for them to be disciplined, is they are a wild bunch. And then I was sent to training in Kunming for military training, and off to India for my primary flight training, then down to Arizona, where I graduated from the American Air Force. I was sent over by the Chinese Air Force. When I graduated and then being able to speak English and all, they selected a few to join the Flying Tigers. So I'm one of those.
So you're a Flying Tiger, too?
Yeah.
Mm. So, what was it like being a Flying Tiger?
Oh, very, very interesting life. I had, to date, a very, very interesting life, to be very frank. It all happened like a big dream, you know.
What did you do with the Flying Tigers? You know, once you trained?
I was flying medium bombers, B-25s, right in China. I came back in end of 1944, and 45 the war was over. Then I quit my commission and went into commercial flying in China. And I did
these bombing. You know, you were saying you were in bombers.
Yeah, we bombed Chinese territory. That was when occupied Chinese territory by the Japanese. So we came back, and then we used to go out. There are certain military target that we got to get rid of, like arsenals and military base and all that.
This seems to me very different from working with pacifists.
Yeah, it's very, very different.
Did you feel happier being with the Flying Tigers than you were?
It is not whether I'm happy or not. I felt it's a job. And I remember when I went to India on my way out from Burma, and there is a reporter came and talked to me. And I remembered the first time I see blood, I said, gee, all these wounded, you know, it really makes me, my skin creeps. Then it's a matter of expression. And then I came back, I went into the Air Force. And what is more is that even we do drop bombs, there might be killing, but we'll never see them. So inside me, I'm still a religious man. Unless forced to do it, I will not go out and kill somebody. There's a difference. Sometimes we were talking among ourselves. He says, how would you feel to go and drop a bomb on somebody and kill so many people? I said, that is different. That's a war. But if you ask me to go out with a bomber now and then just go over innocent cities to drop a bomb, then I won't do it. If I damn, I'll be mad. So it is a matter of whether you use your discretion. And we are brought up in a way. I'm quite happy. My home life was a happy one. Although my parents got 11 children, we are not rich, but we are very happy. During my younger days, we only eat chicken and pork twice a month. That is when the time they pray to the idols. But we were happy. We are a very happy family.
If I could go back to when you were with the FAU and behind the, when you were with the, at the front, yeah. You were saying, with the ambulances. And it was very interesting when you said you weren't allowed to have a gun. You know, that you were there unarmed.
Yeah, well...
Did that worry you?
It don't. You see, my mission up, you see, there are certain period of the day, like almost 3 to 4 o'clock in the morning, both sides stop firing. Then both sides send their ambulance men up to the front to take their wounded back. And I'm one of those that went up to the front.
What was it like at the front there?
Oh, it's quiet.
Were there many casualties?
There is quite a bit of casualties. And then when we take them back and when they got... stop breathing. I became a grave digger, you know, dig some of these ditches and just bury them. There are so many in Burma that's buried where, until today, the poor families don't know where they are. But that is there's war. And those days, we didn't ask for that war. The Japanese did. So, and the time, myself, I don't think I do a lot of thinking. See, it is just when the thing started and the Japanese was raping and killing people up in Nanking and Manchuria and all those places. And that got into our blood when we were really young. And we said, gee, these fellas are bandits. And if we, as young people of the Chinese origin, we do not fight, who do you expect to fight? And in Singapore... We got a millionaire Chinese who was later the overseas leader in China. He always said, when you people with money give out money, donates money, and people with strength donate their strength. And those days, I never look back. Until today, I also have a policy. I don't look back. Because what is over is over. There's no reason to look back. You look back, it might hurt. And if it's good things, you got happy memories. But those are gone. Those days are gone. That's why when I first came over in February and I met Theo Willis and Tom Owen, and he I was surprised because McClure gave me the address, gave me Theo Willis' address. And I was really surprised to see them after, well, I left them in the end of 41. That's almost 50 years. And I met them, two of them, and we got to talking. He said, hey, we got a reunion coming up. You think you want to come and join us? I say, sure, why not? It is, looking back 50 years is something we feel is quite important at that time. Right? The people like the FAU people from overseas, I personally appreciate them because They don't have to do that work, you know. They don't have to serve that. And a lot of them are young, same like me. That's why all of us are about the same age. And to be very frank, we never look back to say, oh, we are on the road and how we suffer or what we sleep under the trucks or the food is, we never complain. There's no complaint. But they say, go to Rome, do what the Romans do. So when I joined them, I was a Buddhist. But then they had this church service. I still go and attend the church service. Well, they are very religious. And then we had the China mission people. When we go to every place, we are really welcomed by them. So
you probably gathered, you know, from what has been said today and the films yesterday, that they all love China, don't they? They really do seem to have...
That is why, you see, on this reunion, when they saw me and then we talk about China, it brings back the old days, the happy days that we were together.
Do you think they were different as sort of Western people, the FAU, the way they treated Chinese people?
Oh, they are very much, very much different from a lot of the people without really a religion. I think maybe the FAU, the Quakers or whatever, the pacifist blood in them, make them a bit, really a bit different from the other Europeans, like the Americans. The Americans, sometimes I don't think I appreciate them. They do a lot of good. They go to China, they fight a war for China, but they are soldiers of fortune. The Chinese paid them. But on the other hand, they get wild. They molest the girls. They do this, they do that. And they, to be very frank, I think I've grown up in the British society and I'm quite prejudiced in the sense that the British are more gentlemen than the Americans. They're a wild bunch. So that's why I went to Canada when I took my citizenship. The judge asked me, you know, swear to be allegiance to the Queen. Then I was laughing. And I told the judge, look, judge, I'm already a subject of the Queen because I'm born in Penang, which is a British colony. And I say, don't you think if I swear allegiance to the Queen at that time, two no's make one yes, you know, and two yes make one no. So indirectly, I avoid myself of the British citizenship. Oh, the judge, we were laughing and joking and all that.
How did you regard the Kuomintang in China?
The Kuomintang, I was very disappointed with them after the war.
Why was that?
You see, being flying around in the country as a commercial pilot, there are a lot of things I pick up. You see, during the Japanese war, they are the only party that is recognized by the alliance. The communists had to join them in order to get the backing of the alliance. And that is the time during the Japanese war that the communists joined. And Mao Zedong, Zhou Enlai, all came under Chiang Kai-shek. But they are more aggressive than the Kuomintangs. The Kuomintang, when they get this military equipment from the Americans and all that, they don't use it very much to fight the Japanese. They stole them. Later on, when the war is over, and then they start fighting the communists, then I realize, I pick up news a little here, a little there, and realize that they were, instead of fighting the Japanese to win a war, they are already planning to get rid of the communists. And to me, as I said, I always speak my mind. I think that is bad. You see, the Chinese tradition, it says all Chinese under the sun are brothers and sisters. But here, the Kuomintang, after the war, they get corrupted, and the patronage, you know, their own people. They just, that guy is a bum. He becomes one of the big advisors and all that. And that is why when the People's Republic came into existence, they don't even fire a shot. When Marshall tried to negotiate, he wanted to split China to north and south. That's one thing the Chinese, is Mao Zedong and Chiang Kai-shek, agreed, is that there's only one China, there's no two China. That is where Chiang Kai-shek is quite appreciated, Mao Zedong as well.
What do you think of Mao Zedong?
Mao Zedong, he's good in a sense, but he really worked hard. He comes, he is also a big mouth, to be very frank, but his time is just right. When he big mouth and then he gets things moving, then he is a god. In his later life, when he got sick and all, he was manipulated by the wife, there's Zhang Xing, and that's where he went down. You see, out of goodness, if you do 100 times goodness and just one little slip, it wipes the slate clean. So, like the present communist regime, hoping they do not make the same mistake the Kuomintang does. Now, they got quite a bit of corruption up there. But I personally think, if the outsiders do not meddle with Chinese politics, I think the Chinese will be very much happier. Like the present Tiananmen case, where can the students get so much money financially to try to fight democracy in China? It all comes from Taiwan or the CIA. Now, like the Americans, they forever is putting their nose into some of this business. It's so different. Their politics is so different. They say one thing, they mean another. Like this present Middle East situation, they got a vote taken and the majority of the people said yes, they should go in and wipe out Saddam Hussein. But then on the other hand, they got citizens who are held, so-called hostage in that place. They are against the government starting anything. Now, you cannot eat a piece of bread and keep a piece of bread.
Do you think you're working with the FAU and being, you know, subjected, if you like, to pacifist feelings, has it rubbed off on you? You know, you're sort of indicating quite a depth of thought, aren't you? Do you think they had an influence on you, working with
the
FAU?
They do not. That time, they do not have an influence on me. The influence come is then after serving with them and then going into, as I get older, and actually feeling the thing up in the Burmese front.
Did you think they were naive?
No, I think it's their thinking. Everybody got their freedom of speech, freedom of religion. And what is good for them might not be good for me.
Yes. Do you think that it makes a difference where you live, whether or not you can be a pacifist? You know,
I don't think. It's the pacifist thought is mostly, I think, originated from the religion. The religion itself, they started this thought, then it carries on for generations. And then being a pacifist, I think mostly are born. Like if the parents are pacifists and the children, when they grow up in that kind of environment, they will become a pacifist. Whereas if something like a war starts and people serving, I don't know how far from England this, most probably they got the, a very high percentage of people that are pacifists that go over there. But when you recruit the locals, it might not be 100% of them think have the same thought. They might be, I would say about, when I talk to some of the Chinese members, they feel the same I feel. Because he said, look, the Japanese are invading our country and here you tell us not to fight them. And we have that in our thoughts, but we never express it because, as I always said, it's freedom. You think your way, I think mine. I even had very harsh words with Dr. McClure.